Hey, everybody, this is Shop Talk Show. We have two excellent sponsors for you. I mentioned at the top of the show, one of them is Braintree. If you're working on a mobile app or searching for the right payments API, check out Braintree and their .0 SDK. With one simple integration, your customers get every way to pay. And we'll tell you about all those every ways later. It's really pretty darn awesome. And Environments for Humans are promoting their CSS DevConf, which is going to be super sweet. In fact, I met our guest at a CSS DevConf one time. So it's an in-person conference. This one's going to be out in California. We'll tell you more about both those things later in the show, but for now, let's get funky, Dave.
You're listening to another episode of the Shop Talk Show. I'm Dave on the NyQuil Rupert, and with me is Chris Goyer.
Is that Dave? I think you're feeling a little under the weather, so I guess that's
under the weather. So you get to hear my scratchy voice.
Sometimes when you say it, you're like, "What do you mean druids, under the weather?"
Druids, because they summon weather.
Probably right. We have with
anything
us,
can happen.
Wes Boss. Hey, Wes, thanks for coming on the show.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Yeah. You're probably familiar with Wes's work because he does a whole bunch of it in lots of different arenas. And if you're not, you're going to be by the end of the show, and you're going to be as impressed as we are with him. And as you hear him talk, maybe you can even kind of tell a little bit that Canada.
Yeah, it's right in my accent.
Are you in Canada right as we speak right now?
Yes, I am. I'm in Hamilton, which is about an hour outside of Toronto.
Toronto. Okay, cool. I always like to just ask where people are right this second, because sometimes we travel, and it's just kind of fun to think about that the internet brings us together in real time like this. I'm sitting in Bend, Oregon at the moment, because that's where my friend and co-founder Tim lives at CodePen, and we get together sometimes to work together. So I'm sitting there. Dave's in Austin, Texas.
All right.
I'm sitting in bed.
You're not at Austin JS this weekend?
Oh, TXJS, yeah, big. I'm having, yes,
jealous. I know, so many people going. It sounds so fun.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be fun. I have to rally, like, all my energy. I turned my underwear inside out. I'm rallying hard.
So Wes has a six-letter domain name and six-letter actual name. WESBOS.
Yeah.
So check out Wes Boss's website. Let's talk about all the kind of awesome stuff that you do. What's one way that somebody might have heard of Wes or know about Wes is because he wrote the book on Sublime Text. So the URL for that is Sublime Text Book. The actual title of the book is Sublime Text Power User. I mentioned that first because, I don't know, it's kind of a big, cool thing that you've done. And that's how I met you, is that the last CSS DevConf, I believe, which was in New Orleans, right? That was the one?
Yeah, about last October.
Yep. And you've probably given this talk several times, but it was kind of like, why not talk about talk about the thing that you wrote a book on and stuff. Gave a talk about Sublime Text. And it's a fun talk because it's, you know, everybody, I think there's a lot of people that use Sublime, you know, it's just as a fact. It's one of those, it's that software that kind of, in a sense, replaced TextMate. I hate to say that, but it's kind of true. You know, so many people use it. But then, like, are you getting the most out of it? So I think that was kind of your angle on the talk, is like, you probably use Sublime, or even if you do, like, here's like stuff that you might not know about it that's particularly powerful. It's such an extensible editor that there's a lot you can do with it. So maybe tell us about that a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. So the talk itself is just kind of full of all these little nuggets of kind of, I didn't know you could do that, or I had no idea. And everyone sort of walks away with, I don't know, four or five little things that they can implement into the workflow that just makes life a little bit easier. And the book, so I wrote the book, and I wrote over a year, and I kind of just took a huge deep dive into Sublime Text and learned everything about it, and really just like kind of criticized my workflow as to how I was using it, and looked into every little feature, because I don't know, on the surface, Sublime is very simple. Like, you open it up and it's just a thing where you write code. But if you really kind of get into it, you can figure out how you can make it work for you.
Right. And the, maybe the I don't know, the, maybe there's a lot of stuff that people know and are think is obvious. And then you keep listening to the talk or reading your book. And then you're like, ooh,
yeah,
didn't know that one. Nice. You're like, oh, I knew you could, for example, download the package manager and thus get like an EX6 compatible JavaScript highlighter or something. Like, I knew that. But then, and then you show something like, well, did you know you can command click and get multiple cursors? And then you're like, people are like, what?
Yeah, everybody knows like, some of it, like, but if you,
right,
you kind of want to know everything about it, if you really want to just like take a couple hours, read through the book, do the videos, and just learn everything there is to know. And then when you hit that issue, like, you're like, oh, Wes had something on like being able to flip lines around or be able to convert this array into a single line, and then you can just kind of reference the book or the video real quick and sort of stop there, learn how to do it, and change your workflow forever.
I got one for you. Maybe it's in the book, and if it's not, maybe it, like, I'm just going to hit Wes with some Sublime Text one.
A stumper?
Yeah, maybe it is, and maybe it's not. I don't know. Maybe it's simple, but I bet people run into it a lot, is that I use Find in Project, like, I don't know, 100 times a day, you know, because I'm looking for a class name or just whatever. I want to jump to a file. I can't remember what the file is called, or I just am working on buttons, and I want to find a button of a certain example. You know what I mean? People Find in Project all the time, and Sublime Text is awesome, and it's so fast, you know, and the search results are great, and you can jump right to the line of the file. It's so cool. But Find in Project is notorious at, like, finding everything. So like if you search for like a class or whatever, some like fairly common word, or even if it seems like an uncommon word, it will surprise you that like, oh, it's showing up in the minified jQuery source, or it's showing up in a minified thing. So I want to remove files from search results that I just know I never ever ever want to show up in search results, because I'm never looking for jQuery.js, you know, just that's never something I want to show up in search results.
Yeah,
I know there's a thing in this called, you know, so you can go into your user preferences and you can put like binary file patterns or something weird like that.
There's three of them. There's binary file patterns, which will make sure that it doesn't show up in your like for example, like an image. If you don't want to open an image in Sublime Text, so it just would show you the kind of the binary behind it. But you've also got file exclude patterns and folder exclude patterns, which will...
So there's three different ones. Okay. And
yeah.
some of them hide them from the sidebar as well. And sometimes you like kind of don't want that.
Yeah. Sometimes or, like, you want what do you, if you want to see jQuery in the sidebar, then, I forget which one it is, but, I'm pretty sure folder exclude pattern and file exclude patterns, what that will do is it will still show it in the sidebar, I believe, but not show it in your go to anything in your find. And then another one will just take it out altogether.
Okay. So there's kind of ways to do it, but
yeah.
Is there ways to do it on a project by project basis rather than globally in Sublime?
Yeah. You can put all of these like Sublime Text settings. You've got like your preferences.sublime-settings, but you can also have project specific, which is kind of like, I like to say it's kind of like CSS, where if you have a more specific setting in your project file, it will override the global setting. So you can just have some ignored.
Is it a project. Dot file?
No, it's in Sublime Text, we have the concept of projects, and it's just a file called sublime-project, and it includes all the metadata.
So you have to use that.
Yeah, you have to use Sublime Text projects for that. Yeah, you kind of carry along a... It's kind of like a dot file, but Sublime doesn't use dot files.
Gotta be nice if it did, kind of.
Yeah.
Then you could share it.
Another tip while you're on that is a lot of people use Find to look for class names or look for methods or look for things like that. And instead of actually just using the Find, which is what most people do, is if you use like Command P, it uses the go to anything palette. And from there, you can filter for what are called symbols, which... In JavaScript, it would be like a method or a function, or in CSS, it would be like a selector. And in that case, you can search project wide for a symbol, a method, or a class, and it will go right
to Command P.
Command P, yeah, it'll go to anything. It's probably one of the best parts of Sublime.
I never use it.
Oh, you got
to start using it. So, but if I do, I have my whole project open right now. I did Command P, and I'm going to search for like dot. Like a class that I know exists in my project. It's not really like finding stuff.
That Command P actually will, that's just in the current file. But if you go to and go to symbol in project. There's no key binding by default. You have to add one. And that's new in Sublime Text 3. That will look in your entire project, and it'll kind of parse out all the methods and whatnot.
Oh, nice. Go to symbol in project. Yeah. See, that's the kind of stuff that a good IDE should bring, and it does.
Yeah.
I'm surprised you wrote this book, because the Sublime Text website is just so helpful out of the box. What inspired you to go through the effort to make a really beautiful, easy to use guide?
Yeah, I don't know. I think that kind of answers it. It's that I had a whole bunch of blog posts on it, and they just blew up. So I figured people are really hungry for kind of hot tips. Like even today, I just tweeted a little GIF on how to jump from the opening bracket to the closing bracket, and it got like 100 retweets in just like an hour. Mm.
That's built into. I know Emmet has a lot of that stuff too. So that's kind of like it's interesting that Sublime is into that as well. It's weird for us on CodePen because we support Emmet and Sublime Text bindings and stuff. Yeah. And, you know, at some point it's like, oh my gosh, there are so many key commands that it's kind of less like you're on your own. Yon yon, man. You got a really good URL for the book. So check out sublimetextbook.com. There's all kinds of that stuff in there. And it comes with videos too, doesn't it?
Yep. It comes with videos. Most people go for the videos because some of the things in Sublime Text are a little bit hard to just read, and you can just watch someone do it and totally understand it much quicker.
Pretty visual thing, yeah.
And Wes Boss on Twitter, of course, at the same URL, WESBOS, and is very good at that kind of crafting the perfectly shareable tweet. He's very good to follow for that reason. I feel like you're quite the tweet author.
Tweet Smith.
Yeah, the Tweetsmith. That's what we should call it. Yeah. They're always always blowing up. This one today is pretty good. Control
going viral. Jumps. Yeah.
Going viral. I'm going to retweet it right now. But you got a new one. So the Sublime, that's been out for a while. It's been out for potentially years.
Almost a year, yeah. In October, it'll be a year.
Yeah. And maybe even you've heard about it before because you sponsored Shop Talk at one point. Mm-hmm. It was effective. Makes for convincing data to share with our other advertisers. We're like, see, it works even for any product.
Yeah. For something small like that, it paid off, which is really nice.
The new one. So this book was called Command Line Power User or Sublime Text Power User. Why not recycle the brand into Command Line Power User, which is a newer thing that you're working on?
Yeah. Yeah, that's just a little video series that I put together. It's not a paid, it's not a book, but essentially, like, being a front-end dev these days, you need to actually be in the command line at some point, whether you're doing Gulp or SAS or blah, 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 whatever. So I put together I forget how many what it was, but commandlinepoweruser.com. It's a list of about 10 or so videos, and just kind of showing everyone how you can use ZSH and Z, just some nice tools to make the command line less painful and be able to move around pretty quickly.
The command line is already so useful.
You can just type help, and it's like your book is already in.
Yeah. You know what it is because I teach a lot of people who are new to coding. And if you just tell them, like, open up terminal, and it's just a white screen with black text on it, and it just pukes all this stuff at you, they're just like, what is this? So being able, or you tell them, like, just move into the folder, and it's, like, impossible to type CD, and if you have a space in the folder, you have to teach them about escaping, and all this just pain-in-the-ass stuff that you don't really have to do when you use Z.
You know, worse than it being confusing, I feel like if you're new to coding, you'd be like, I don't know that I want this to be my job.
Yeah, exactly. It's true. It's like, I got into this to make beautiful websites, and now you're telling me to like install, like brew install something, and I don't know what that is.
Yeah, and just you're all excited and frothing at your mouth about it.
Yeah. Worship the black box.
And it's so, I feel like, shouldn't this be like, let's talk about this. I have a Rails project, Dave, you know what that's like. And you have a, you know, kind of Rails server active terminal session going. And as you browse around the site, Rails is just barfing stuff at you. you know, like stuff, like what it's rendering and stuff. Every and like if there's an error,
SQL,
yes,
query,
and it's formatted so poorly, it's unbelievable. Like, how old is the project? Is there any formatting you could apply to this to make this more digestible? Or maybe it's formatted perfectly for the people that tend to look at it more. But there's one that I come across all the time, which is I've written something into a template that's like throwing an error. And the error is so undecipherable, you know, like it shows one little line with one little like up arrow pointing at the line, you know, which that's the useful part. So it's like, could you just show me that part? And then like what template it happened in, not the entire stack trace. It's 50,000 lines long. And like, I just feel like, isn't there some way to format command line output to look a little nicer than it currently does? And why don't people ever do that?
Yeah, it's pretty easy to do. I know, like, if you ever work with Express, which is a node-based web server, they do a great job.
It has nice output.
At colorifying their output.
Oh, and it's colored?
Yeah, that's the key. And you don't even need a special terminal for it to be color. Like, NPM does a great job at coloring as well.
Mm. I've seen, like, stuff that colors stuff in, like, the browser console. That should happen more often.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's stuff. Commandlinepoweruser.com and flexbox.io is another West thing that's happening.
I'm working on that. That should be out in about a week. It's just, again, Flexbox is hard. It's weird. The API is weird.
Truly,
so it's
just kind of...
Just watch like these videos and you'll be fine.
I feel like getting started in it is pretty easy. And then like all of a sudden, like something weird will come up. You'll be like, how do I do that?
Yeah.
And you'll be like, whoa. So the basics aren't so bad in Flexbox, but the complicated stuff is truly complicated. In fact, I did a little video on it recently where I was like pulled off something that I thought would be hard or impossible with other methods, and it kind of is, and Flexbox solved it. But then somebody's like, well, can you do this? It's like when it... Their question was extending, I don't know, I had two things right and left, and as they run into each other and wrap, that they become kind of left aligned, which was easy to do in Flexbox. But then they're like, could you do it so like when they hit each other and they wrap, then they become centered as well? And I was like, no. But maybe, because Flexbox is complicated, so maybe there's stuff.
Yeah, there's
it's a little hard to wrap your head around the
settings.
Like, what does Flex Shrink actually do? You know, don't know. Like, I usually can like manipulate the numbers to get it to do what I want it to do, but I can't say that I could explain to you with perfect clarity exactly what Flex Shrink does.
Yeah, it's kind of confusing, and sometimes it just doesn't take effect when you have other settings, and depending on which way your axis is going, you can get confused.
Right, yeah. The axes is a thing. And then there's like little bugs with axes, like, you know, I don't know. There's like one where forget it. Maybe let's not get into it. Flexbox is weird. You can learn about it from Wes. cool. So we have some, do you have any errata, Dave, that you feel like talking about? You have a new machine sitting next to you, don't you?
Oh, well, I have a new machine sitting next to me, kind of fresh out of the box. I can't say much now, but on the surface, things are looking good.
Ouch.
Okay. You might remember a few episodes we talked about things. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, that might be happening. Mm-hmm. But I gotta write some blog posts, okay? So, working on that. There was so much drama earlier this week, but I forgot it, and I'm sick, so I don't want to step into the drama snake pit. So, I think we should just move on to question and answer. What do you think?
Let's just do one question before I start telling you about more interesting stuff. This is one I associate. This is one that's been in our queue forever, and I associate it with Wes a bit. So it's from Henry Allsuch. What does he say, Dave?
What are your favorite coding application theme and coding font to work with? I have found many are ugly and make my eyes bleed and are actually distract me from the code. So I started to create my own theme. It's in its early days, and I have just made the switch from Coda to Sublime. That has probably happened quite a while ago. Still, lots of work to do. Any advice and comments would be welcome. And the URL for his code theme is Henry Allsuch, Allsuch /chalkboard. And switched to Droid Sans Mono there. And he likes it more than Menlo or Monaco.
So he's just asking about what is our favorite kind of like themes for our editor, and what's it available for, and what font do we like and stuff like that. Do you have some opinions on this?
Yeah, I actually love talking about this stuff. I could just like go to a bar with people and talk about like their favorite font and how the zero and the O are different. So I actually have my own theme, which is called Cobalt 2. If you remember way back in the TextMate days, we had one called Cobalt, which is kind of like blue. Because I never really liked the dark black ones. I really hate the default one that comes with Sublime, that kind of poo brown color. So, I mean, it's one called Cobalt 2, which is kind of it's kind of a soft navy blue with like the colors really, really pop on it. Lots of kind of bright yellow and bright purple and the methods, and they jump off the page at you. So that's called Cobalt 2. I made it for Sublime, but it's been ported to Vim. It's been ported to Atom. There's a iTerm theme for it. It's anything you want. It's probably been ported to that.
What's the name of it again?
It's called Cobalt 2. I just posted a link in the chat.
Cobalt 2. Okay.
And I've been working on it for maybe like 5 years now, so it's being pretty refined over the years. Mm-hmm. I've just like all my like little opinions about how things should go and how comments should look and stuff like that. So I really like that one. People are really a big fan of this new one called Oceanic, I think. It's because it has support for. I'll find the link for it, but it's got support for a lot of the new JavaScript methods, which mine does as well, but it just does a great job at displaying ES6.
This is nice. So does yours handle all the little icons and stuff for the different file types?
Yeah. So Sublime has like two things. You got a color scheme, which is like how the code looks, and then you have a theme, which is like the sidebar and the tabs and everything that goes along with that. So I have a theme and a color scheme, and then the theme does things like I always forget to save. A lot of my students, the biggest problem they have is they forget to save.
Has this yellow line underneath the tabs that are
huge
unsaved.
Yellow line and a big yellow circle on it, and then all of the different icons in the sidebar that show you what type of file it is.
Nice.
Yeah.
So, and you could use this even if you like, because I tend to like, I always try to switch themes and I always end up back at Twilight, but I could use Cobalt 2 just for the sidebar-y and tab stuff and then still use Twilight if I wanted to in the code area.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I really like Cobalt, but like, if you don't like it, then don't use it. A lot of people just take either one. They don't like the sidebar, or they do like the sidebar, but they rather a theme in it. So you can just pick either or both.
Yeah, whichever one you want. That's cool.
Yeah.
I've messed with SETI is another one that's a sidebar-y theme. There's a material design one that's pretty popular.
Yeah, right? that one's great.
Cool. Yeah. So you might as well, because what I think is important about this a little bit too is that it just feels kind of fun when you open up your editor, and it feels like you, and it feels like you're like a comfortable, cool place, you know?
It's just
like, it's nice. Like anytime my theme gets like corrupted or I, you know, switch versions, something screws up, or I got to use a different computer or something, I'm like, ugh.
Yeah. It's like, oh, it's weird. Or when I teach on a projector and it's in like a bright room, I always have to switch to like a light theme if you're at a conference or something like that. And it always feels a little bit weird.
So I'm going to put Cobalt 2, SETI, material design. I'll put all the links.
I use Inconsolata, which I'm a big fan of.
Mm. Yeah. We offer that one on CodePen. I think, or maybe it's coming. There's like four or five we support, and then there's like three or four that we're going to add. So yeah, I like thinking about this too. I like Source Code Pro pretty well.
Source Code Pro is nice. Mm-hmm. I like Anonymous Pro. That's from Mark Simonson, creator of Proxima Nova. We did his website. It's nice.
Oh wow, yeah.
Did you really?
Input
Paravel
from
did?
Font. Yeah. Yeah,
we know that.
Site. Yeah. And then input from Font Bureau is nice. Input code font. So it's That's like
input. Oh, that's the one. Yeah. That's the one that I bought and I have not put on CodePen yet, but we have their permission to or whatever.
Oh, right.
That's coming.
It's soup's cool.
So like Wes was saying, there's stuff that like, so they're all for the most part are monospace, because it would kind of be weird probably to program in a non-monospace
one. Yeah, I know a few people that program in Helvetica. It's bizarre that it works for them. Yeah.
I feel like that's kind of an iOS-y. I don't know. I see that more in... when like Xcode people, but whatever. Yeah. I think like the space, like it, I need stuff to line up. It's just got to happen. Plus, it just is more digestible in that way. It's great for code. I mean, that's what it's kind of built for, I think. But there's stuff like how thin or narrow is it? How distinguishable are the characters from each other? Is there a dot in the zero and not in the capital O, for example?
Yeah.
How different are the characters and stuff like that? Try different ones, I guess, is the point, right?
Yeah. I've got a blog post that kind of does a bit of a roundup of my favorite 11. And then in the comments, it's just everybody went nuts with recommending theirs. So just spend some time figuring out what works for you.
It's kind of like a pair of shoes.
Yeah.
You want it to like look like you, feel like you. You try it on and if it until it's weird and outdated, and then you switch it up.
Exactly.
It's like a pair of shoes.
Exactly.
That's nice.
If it's weird, switch it up.
And if you do it perfectly, you become a 10x developer immediately. So if you have the best combination, you'd catapult to 10x.
Let me tell you a little bit about our sponsor that's fairly new. I think we've done one other one, although I know that I've talked about Braintree before, but it may not be out yet, so this may be the first one that actually airs on CodePen. Thank you so much to Braintree for sponsoring. One thing I can tell you about them, there's some stuff that they want us to tell you about them, which we'll do, but I can tell you that at CodePen, we're in the early stages of starting to use Braintree for the reason of when you're dealing with payment stuff, it's such a pain in the butt anyway that it's like if there's beautiful APIs available for payment stuff, you want to use them to make your life easier. So I can't wait to start using it. And so we're going to not necessarily switch, but start also offering Braintree stuff because it, for example, handles all the PayPal stuff. So it's like kind of, sorry, PayPal, but like, you know, they're the same company. So we're just jabbing each other, but like better APIs than the normal native PayPal ones. So you might as well use the Braintree ones anyway. And because you're then using Braintree, then you automatically get like Apple Pay and Android Pay and Bitcoin and all that stuff through the same APIs. Like it doesn't matter what choice people pay with, the APIs are kind of the same, which is pretty cool. So they have an SDK for the whole thing. The idea is, you know, it's simple to integrate. It's secure. It's kind of like a it's done in minutes kind of thing. You know, it's like not particularly hard to do. You can give them a call and they'll help you with it. It works on the web, but you can also use the same kind of APIs in your Android apps and iOS apps and, you know, through JavaScript and that type of stuff. They have code for you to use in .NET and Node and Java and Perl and PHP and Python and Ruby and all that stuff, ready to kind of use stuff. Super clear documentation on the stuff. You know, it's as simple as maybe 10 lines you can put in and start accepting stuff through Braintree. So pretty darn cool. Definitely check out Braintree. I think the URL is braintreepayments.com/shoptalk, and that will be so you know. You came from us. That always helps Shop Talk a little bit. But I'm pretty excited about it. Like if we switch to this, it handles our PayPal stuff at CodePen, and all of a sudden we can start taking Bitcoin too. Yes, please. Mm-hmm. You know,
having set up a few PayPals in my day, I can tell you this.
I mean, you can be mad at us if you want Braintree, but PayPal APIs kind of suck, and Braintree APIs are awesome. So
there you go.
Yep.
All right. Well, let's move on, shall we? We're one question in. So, question number two. Tristan McDonald writes in, I'm a one-man show making sites for small clients, and I'm trying to make my workflow as modern and sensible as possible to save me time and hassle. Using the command line is something I often hear recommended, but I'm finding it hard to find much about it on a PC. Is that something people do?
Isn't it kind of like that Unix is the base for a command line, and OS X is based on Unix, thus it automatically has a command line, but PCs aren't, so it's like not, doesn't really have a normal command line. Do I have that wrong?
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. So Unix-based systems, which is Mac and Linux, are based on Unix, and they have all the stuff that you're used to either on your server or on your computer. And then Windows has...
CD and RF. And,
yeah. Everything you're used to, and SSH and whatnot, and Windows has PowerShell, which is like it's kind of the same, but it's different, and it doesn't work the same. So what people on Windows do is, rather than try to just like limp along on the Windows one, is you can install some sort of shell that will either emulate a Unix. So there's this thing called Cygwin, which Cygwin will just emulate a Unix shell on Windows. And if you're looking to do like the command line power user series, there's a shell that someone built called Baboon, B-A-B-U-N. And you can just install that and you're up and running with all the Unix stuff. And if you're ever watching a tutorial online, you don't have to worry about like, oh, what's the Windows equivalent to do this?
Oh, so it like you would type CD and it would essentially just replicate whatever the kind of Windowsy version of changing a directory is. It's just kind of like all the commands work as you would expect them to, but it's working on the Windows file system or whatever.
I think so. I think that's how it works. Yeah. I know that it's like virtualizing those at somehow. I'm not exactly too sure. I just know that if you want Unixy things, if you want all that to work, like your regular stuff like Bower and npm and gulp, all that stuff works fine.
Nice. But so like if you install SAS, you can then, and you read a tutorial that says this is how you compile SAS on the command line, that will still work even though you're on a PC.
Yeah. You got to be doing some pretty like deep end stuff to be hitting these Windows things, because all these tools that are generally they're built on Node, and Node has put a ton of work into making sure that the experience is flawless from Windows and Mac. Because I think something like 40% of NPM users are on Windows, which is nothing to shake a stick at.
I thought that seems even low to me.
Yeah.
I'm always surprised at like how big the Windows empire is. Tristan, don't worry about it. Just install Baboon, or what's the other one? Cygwin?
Cygwin is kind of hard. You got to build it yourself, which is not a great thing to do. So Baboon is, it's like ZSH and Cygwin and all this kind of nice stuff built in. Another one is called Commander, CMDR, and it's just a PowerShell, but it's got the kind of cool, if you want to know if your Git repo is, if it's dirty or not, it'll tell you the status of your Git repo. So
nice, like at the command prompt, has like a little different icon or something.
If you just want the fancy command prompt, just install Commander, CMDR.
And a Windows.
Yeah, it's just a Windows. We give it to all of our students because, again, like you dump someone into PowerShell or whatever the Windows one is called, and it's just a disaster.
There, so when you say give it to all your students, that's because you're involved with HackerU, right? Is that what you mean by students?
Yeah, yeah. I'm a teacher at HackerU, and I teach boot camps and part-time classes for web development.
Cool. So how does that work? Is it in person?
Yeah, all of the stuff is in person, and we've got, what is it, like a 2-month, 9-week boot camp, and you can learn HTML, CSS, JavaScript, WordPress, all kinds of stuff, soft skills. And then we have a whole whack of kind of part-time classes, which twice a week. I do mostly the JavaScript ones, but I've also
Into Toronto to do it?
Yeah, it's in Toronto. You got to be in person in Toronto.
Okay, cool. And it's, you know, it's like, I'm sure it's a paid thing, right? It's, the idea is to, it's like a pseudo college alternative or supplementary.
Yeah, exactly. It's I don't know, like the colleges are great, but at least here in Canada, what they try to teach you in web development is like, open up Dreamweaver and start to like just copy paste this code. And this industry moves too quickly for these, some of these colleges to keep up. So we sort of just bring in industry experts, people like me who are working in the field, who do this every day, who I work on client stuff all day long, and then come in and show them how I do it in client stuff.
Very cool. Check out HackerU. That's a pretty big one. That I'm sure there's multiple branches of that too, right? It's all over.
This one's just Toronto. In Toronto. Yeah.
Oh, is it? Interesting, because I've heard of it, and sometimes you must be a at least well regarded, or maybe I just know through you so much. But okay, so I got an interesting email from somebody that is related to these things, and that, you know, HackerU isn't alone. I'm involved with one called YWebCA a little bit. There, a lot of them are marketed at and. No matter how they are, whether they're free or cheap or expensive or short or long or for us targeting a certain group of people or whatever, one thing that they tend to have all in common is that, like, there's a labor gap, or, you know, colleges don't teach it well enough, or whatever. We can level you up with the idea that you could probably make your life better because you could probably get a job in this, because there's a lot of jobs in tech right now.
Yeah.
So you should take this because then you could get a job, right? We kind of agree.
Yes.
That's the scope of these things. And the email was not that that's bad necessarily, but it's kind of funny that the job angle is so strong with all of these, and that maybe that's good and maybe not. Like, maybe what is so attractive about web stuff is that there's more to it than just a job. And if everything's so focused on job, like is that, you know, like,
yeah,
you
attract the wrong kind of crowd when you do stuff like that. We really try not to focus on come here and you get a job, or come here and you're going to make 60 grand out of the door, just because you're going to get the wrong kind of people. You shouldn't be showing up to web development because that's what you want. You should be showing up because you love to create stuff and it interests you.
That's the thing. But maybe the job will follow anyway, because you're more into it, because you're learning to create, and creating feels so good and powerful and interesting, and helps build communities and helps other people achieve their goals. And like, there's a lot of like beauty and like fun and stuff that comes along with that. That it's like, I wonder if the focus on jobs stuff is too strong, and that like the jobs will follow if you can find the passion or whatever, even though that's a little overused of a word, but you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think you're totally right on with that. You can't just say follow these steps and you will have a job, because the reason you're probably leaving your last job is because you just don't like it, right? So if you come into this and you don't like it, it's not going to be any different. And if you don't love it so much that you're constantly, like, people are listening to a podcast on their spare time about web development, if you don't love it that much, it's probably not going to work out for you.
You know what? Funny. I'm going to do a sponsor really quick, and then we're going to bring into Steve's question here. Like, I didn't even mean to segue this well, but I think it's going to segue well. But first, let me tell you about, if you're really interested in leveling yourself up with web stuff, I think, and even if you like are out of the loop a little bit, potentially, I think going to a conference is kind of a really powerful way to level up quickly, because you get a lot of different perspectives really quickly, and you kind of see what the vibe is on these things. That I get a lot of conferences still, just because I feel like, even if I don't like come away and, you know, I didn't know much about programming in Node, and I go to a conference and now I know how to program in Node, that's not usually how it happens. What usually happens is I like become more aware of what Node can do, and I get like where it fits into the process and what people are excited about and what people are doing with Node. That's kind of the kind of thing. In the world of CSS, there's a lot of stuff going on as well. Like, what are the new modules? What are people doing with layout? How does Flexbox work? The kind of stuff that you may not know about. If you go to CSS DevConf, which is coming up here, so check out CSSDevConf.com, you'll get that. You'll get a strong leveling up. You'll get a strong sense of community of what's going on in the CSS world. So there's tons of sessions. They were picked by the community double blind, meaning that these were voted on as what sessions people wanted to see without it being a popularity contest, which is pretty cool. If you do want to actually level up your coding skills, there are conferences available too, what's the other C word? Workshop. That's not a C word, Chris. You know what I mean, though? There's often workshops that are accompanied by which are different than talks. They're like really long versions of talks where you, with less people, where you really kind of level up in one particular thing, which is pretty cool. So there's one on SAS, one on SMAX, that type of stuff. What's cool about this one is that it's on a boat. It's on the Queen Mary in California. CSS DevConf is kind of known for being at weird, unusual locations. So Dave and I will both be there. It's going to be pretty darn cool. Can't wait for it. So it's coming up, CSSDevConf.com.
All right. Well, Steve Brass called in, but sadly, we lost the MP3 because Record MP3 is down, and that's why you don't use...
Sometimes it's back up, but it's down today.
Down today. Zero, not found.
Error not found. Barf.
Sorry.
So it's a simple question, though. He just says, I'm wondering if creative satisfaction is more valuable than money. And he said to please listen to his recording for the full thing. Sorry, we lost that, Steve. But that's the idea that we were just kind of talking about. Is creative satisfaction valuable? We've talked about this a little bit before, I think, Dave, and maybe even written a blog post about it, maybe, or at least have a draft on it. Whereas this, like, the cost of not shipping kind of thing, or like the, like, I need to feel like I'm doing something in this industry, and it's almost more important than your salary sometimes. Isn't that right?
Yeah, I definitely think so. I think the idea that you can, it's kind of like entropy in my mind. If as long as your energy is going somewhere, you're happy. But if it just stays inside, bottled up, and never gets out, and you're not satisfied, you know, you'll explode or implode, maybe is a better word there. I kind of struggled, you know, with when things are shipping on a slow cycle, you don't see it out live. Your ideas are never validated. You're kind of like, oh, this isn't good. And you're like, I would take a like $25 web job or a free job just to see something go out into the wild. So for me, that is hands down completely true. So Wes, you seem to have a high ship rate. I'm sure you feel sort of the same.
Yeah, I think that it's super important to be shipping stuff and having people see it. There's a lot of burnout in our industry. There's a lot of people that get really sick of it because they're just constantly slinging WordPress themes for like Pepsi or something like that. And it's just not, you don't get a lot of like feel goods out of that. So I think it's always important to have like side projects and stuff like that. It's easy to say creative is more important than money, but like you also need money to live. So if you are working a day job and you need to do that to make your money, but it's not extremely satisfying, then start side projects. I've got a lot of like little side projects that I put on out, and I just have my tweet deck open all day long, and I get nice little notes from people saying like, oh, thank you so much for releasing this tool, or wow, this is a really great video series that you did. And it just it makes you happy, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I was gonna maybe pose a hypothetical situation.
Okay.
On the Chef Talk Show, welcome to the hypothetic chamber. All right, situation is, job A is for bigcorp.biz, and it's going to be boring, you know, like you said, slinging WordPress themes like 100 a week, boring, just menial, rough stuff. So you can do that, but it pays $30,000 more than job B, which is at Groove Dog Agency, which has, I don't know, just a few clients a year. You don't get paid as much. I put the number at 30 because that seems like a significant kind of break.
Yeah.
So which job do you take?
I think I would probably go for the creative one, just because I found that in my life when I have times to be creative, I find that when I have time to just kind of work on whatever I want, both my skill grows in leaps and bounds, as well as like doors just start opening up. So like early on in my career, I was doing just like a lot of like client work, but I stumbled into just making blog posts, and I put up a couple of blog posts. I said, this is kind of what I'm making. And that opened up crazy amount of doors in terms of like interesting client work, better paying client work, speaking engagements, et cetera, et cetera. It started to build my audience. So I don't know. I think if you want to move forward in your career and you eventually get to that extra 30 grand, you need to allow yourself to have that creative freedom and that space to do stuff that you enjoy.
Mm, that's good. Ooh. That's good. Chris, do you have
how much more money do I make at the other
end? 30K to work at bigcorp.biz versus Groove Dog Agency. Ugh.
Dave,
that's a lot of clams. That's a lot of
30 grand.
A lot of adult beverages.
It truly is. And I think being, you know, I have a lot of freedom in my life, and I don't, you know, like I just, like I'm trying to say is if I had, you know, two kids and, you know, a mom I was like taking care of because of some health issue or something, I'd take the 30 clams in a second. But
sure.
If you're in a position in life where you can, I think you'll get more out of the creative agency and potentially give yourself some, hopefully the hours is another thing to consider as well. Like, do you work for 30 grand less and you have to work more hours because it's a little scrappy agency, whereas you make 30 grand more and you get to work less because it's a big agency and everybody just leaves. That's kind of a big deal too. I would hope that if you're making 30 grand less, that you have a little bit more freedom too. And that maybe it's like a, you know, it's like a Monday through Thursday kind of place, or you get some me time or whatever to work on a side project. Imagine if you knew a ton about, you know, grid layout or something, you could make a little online course for it while you're working at this job that makes 30K less, but you're working on something that's, might potentially earn you passive income later.
Yeah, exactly.
Or you're drawing t-shirts to sell on Cotton Bureau, or you're doing something. You know, we always think of this, the ideas that are the ideas that we do, but there's of course a million ideas out there of other ways to do it. You could sell stuff on Etsy. You could, you know, whatever. I've always been kind of like half entrepreneurial like that. Like kind of like what can I do to, I don't know, make a few bucks in some obscure way. Anyway, probably the creative one, because it will make your mind healthier too, probably.
Yeah. All right. Well, this has been another episode of the Hypothetic Chamber. Oh, that's the best running game show we've ever
had. You should have a sound effect for that.
All right. Here, we can do the beep. You're entering the Hypothetic Chamber.
That's good. I love it. I switched to using, I haven't used TweetDeck in a long time, and I busted it open because I heard that you can make a team account on TweetDeck. So I have an account for CSS Trick. You know, we could even use this for Shop Talk, Dave, so that we could like, we already kind of just share the password between each other, but TweetDeck allows you to have like one master user and invite other Twitter users to be on that team of it, and they can, and then in TweetDeck they can like tweet on behalf of that account, but you didn't have to share your password with them, so you could always kind of like revoke that access from in there. I didn't know you could do that in TweetDeck, but you can. It's pretty cool, and you can like really customize it with all the what you want to see and don't want to see in there, and you can like schedule tweets, which is useful.
Yeah, I have a huge mute list.
Do you really? Oh, you can mute in here?
Yeah,
oh,
just nice. Like anytime like some celebrity does something stupid, just pop open the mute. And add in whatever, and it stops it.
It really is a powerful way to use Twitter, and it's right on the web, and it looks good, and it has a really nice UI. It's just been a long time since I've used TweetDeck. I always use third parties because I don't know, I just kind of like the features and stuff in Tweetbot generally, and there's stuff in Twitterific I like too, but more and more I'm just using the native clients. I guess that's sad to say because it feels like, I don't know, Twitter was like hard-fisted about their APIs and stuff, and maybe they were right to do that.
Yeah.
I don't know.
They bought TweetDeck, though. It used to be a standalone company.
Oh, that's right. Anyway, if you haven't used it in a while, I feel like it's nicer than I remember it.
Yeah, I love it.
All right, let's do some more questions and stuff. We have a little bit more time here. Rob Frampton writes in, I'm working on creating a Node application for the last month or so in my free time. I write all my code in Sublime Text with a few choice plugins to help me debug my JavaScript code like JS Hint. I've discovered that Node IDEs exist. So instead of Sublime Text, it's some other program that's specific to Node, which seems a little unnecessary to me since text editors like Sublime seem to do the trick. Is it even worth looking into? So what, like if, I guess Rob didn't name one in particular, and I can't think of the name of a Node-specific IDE, but apparently they exist. What would be the advantage to that? Like, isn't the case of, can't an IDE like kind of execute the code as you're writing it to find like errors that Sublime probably can't? Because Sublime isn't really like executing your code. It's just kind of looking at the syntax, right?
Yeah. So that's the kind of the main difference between a text editor, Sublime, and an IDE is it's kind of smart. It has a sort of an IntelliSense where if you type an object name, it will pop up a list of available methods. So like we have that in Sublime Text. There's a couple plugins that you can add in, which will give you sort of auto completion that is smart rather than just words that are in the JavaScript file. I don't know. When would you ever? I've never heard of a Node IDE, but that's kind of one thing that they do. Another thing is like the debugging is built right in. So if you've ever tried to just debug a Node app right from the puke in the console, you can know that it's hard, right? So that's another thing that you can do. You can hook your Node console up into like something like a Chrome WebKit console, which kind of show you a bit of nicer errors, or you can like inspect an object, or you can set breakpoints and stuff like that. So I don't know, all that stuff is doable as well. I think I prefer Sublime Text just because IDEs tend to get slow because they're constantly rerunning your code and evaluating it.
But there's one thing about Sublime, it is fast.
Yeah.
And Dave, you use brackets a lot too, right? You're finding it's kind of similarly fast, and it's pretty Adam. Darn comparable. Adam, not Adam. Brackets. Some well, people use brackets.
Brackets is kind of nice too, but I use Adam. I like it. Mm-hmm. I enjoy it. Same sort of deal. I mean,
so I don't know. Like any font we mentioned, you could use it in Adam as well. I'm sure a lot of these themes and stuff people are starting to make for both, aren't they?
Very.
Anything you can do in Sublime is you can do it in Adam and vice versa. Like pretty much the entire book, most of it, aside from a few, I don't know, keyboard shortcuts, it all applies in Sublime or in Adam.
That's pretty wild.
So I was just going to say, I don't know any hardcore Node people who use a Node IDE.
No, me neither.
Right? I've never met anyone who's like, oh, I use this Node IDE and it gets me 10%. It turns me 10x. No one does that. ain't never heard of that.
Let's do this anonymous question, which I don't have any particular problem with people writing in anonymously, really. Like, what does it matter, right? So at first I was like, this is weird. Like, why can't I say your name? But you know, like, this is a little bit of a sensitive question. So let's see what we have to say. We'll do another, like, weird deep dive into somebody else's life here. Anonymous writes in, I'm in a tough situation. Right out of school, I was hired by a small group of guys. Right now, about 2 years later, the type of businesses we're doing is starting to shift. Jobs from the firearms industry have started landing on my desk, everything from holsters to assault rifle parts. Money is really tight, though, and I feel like refusing to do these jobs will put the business at risk. And that's especially tough with all of them recently having kids. At the same time, I'm losing a ton of sleep over the idea of making a website that makes it easier to buy assault rifle parts. How should I handle this when politically my coworkers are on the other side of the issue? Even if it isn't in my portfolio, do you think that it affect the companies that would hire me knowing that I came from a company that did this sort of work? Boy, that's a
what a doozy. Heavy. Yeah.
Heavy.
Assume there's nothing illegal happening here. So that's kind of one thing, right? Like if you were working on something that was literally illegal, like that would be different, but this isn't. So this is more of a moral situation.
Yeah.
And that you don't like the potentially even the existence of assault rifles, I imagine here, which is an understandable perspective. And the people that you work with possibly, you know, not only think they're okay, but, you know, like
own
them.
Or,
yeah.
Yeah.
You know, we just talked about mind health earlier. If you are morally against something, I would imagine it would be pretty hard to continue.
Yeah. I would have to go on the same way. Every now and then I get offers to work on like adult websites, and it's just not something I'm interested in working on. So I always pass on those. And I don't know, it's easy for me to say because I've got lots of work. What do you do if you need the money and you got to? I would probably just kind of start looking for a new job. At the end of the day, you're just writing code, so your code should stand. What you do, how good of a developer you are, should really stand on its own versus the content that you're actually developing for. But if it's taking a toll on you because you're in the firearms industry all day long, then I think it's time to start looking for a new job. Check out the Shop Talk Show job board.
Hey.
Oh, nice, dude. We'll send you a check for that. Very good. I had this happen. I'm not going to name any names here, but literally a good friend started working at a different agency, and almost right away, a website that they launched, which there's no way that you could identify this person. You have no launched a website that they were moralistically opposed to, and they were like, oh my God, what the how did I possibly start working at this agency? This is totally against my moral standards. It's not going to be in my portfolio, but I'm all of a sudden I'm associated with this because I work at a company that put out a website that's this thing, and it's crazy against my moral things, and it's like totally different than this assault rifle thing. It's a different kind of moral situation. So what they did, and they were nervous, like, should I quit right away? Like, this is a big deal to me. They kind of did the, you know, slept on it kind of thing, and went and brought it to the boss. And they're like, you know what? You're not the first person who has said this to us. We're going to watch it in the future. We're probably going to not do any more work for this particular client. Thanks for bringing it to our attention. We didn't even really think about it because we happen to, like, admittedly, we're not as opposed to this moralistically as you are, but we understand that we're an agency and we need to think about our employees with more vigor than we do the clients that we take, because, you know, we're not an agency if we don't have employees. So, you know, and it turned out to be like kind of good, you know, it wasn't just like
conversation,
right? It was a conversation that needed to happen that might not have happened because, you know, you might be in a different position, anonymous. Maybe everybody knows where each other stand moralistically, but I would bet that you don't. You know, it's not something that gets brought up even over beers very much. You know, like, I feel like a lot of these conversations kind of are avoided because they, you know, you just don't talk about politics at the dinner table kind of thing. But, you know, this isn't the dinner table now. This is, you know, it's the money dinner table.
Yeah, whatever the money table. There's an excellent episode of BizCraft with Gene Crawford, Mean Gene Crawford, and Carl the Jellyfish King Smith. BizCraft over at Unmatched Style. They talked about this, the, like, what happens when your ethics don't match your business, or you know, and I think Gene mentioned, like, they did a bunch of political websites, and they're doing political websites for people they don't really agree with, and they're just like, like,
had to stop.
Yeah, I think they put the brakes on it just because, you know, they took the money and ran with it for a little bit, but then they're just like, man, it's just getting harder and harder to do. And I think Carl made the point, like, if you had no ethics, you'd be super rich because, like Wes, you know, you could take all the adult websites in the world, just whatever. Yes, for sure. You know, or like if, and that's not to say those are wrong, but like if it's wrong for you, it's okay to kind of say no and start looking for something different. You got to think, like, if you're like super Republican and Hillary Clinton is like, come work on my website, you're like, I don't think I can, Hillary, but, you know, vice versa, that could happen too. It's, you know, that's, it's an interesting, I don't know. It's an interesting
it
paradigm.
Is because at what point does, like, the needs of your family and the need for you to make money supersede some moral stuff? Because it can at some point, you know, it wouldn't be like, I'm going to make a website to make it easy to find an assassin. That would clearly be above the line. But if it's kind of like this, you know, I don't know, like, I don't think we should eat as much meat, but I'm going to make an ad that has somebody's wearing some leather shoes in it. You know,
maybe
I'll let these leather shoes slide to this because it's not, it's just, it seems like whatever.
Yeah.
It's not as big of a moral indiscretion or whatever.
Yeah.
Good luck with your choice, Anonymous. I think I've even heard Mike Monteiro say at one point, like, one cigarette ad in your portfolio is a youthful indiscretion, whereas, you know, you're saying a lot more if there's 15 different cigarette companies in your portfolio. Then it's an endorsement of the cigarette industry.
Sure. Yeah. And I would say if you're losing sleep at night, have a conversation or get out. That's what I would say. We're making websites here. There's plenty of work. Don't lose sleep.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't help your family. That's what I would say. Next question. Eric M. writes in, I was just listening to episode 173 with Andy Budd. The three of you were going back and forth about a hypothetical inaccessible follow button. welcome to the hypothetic chamber. As I was listening, it struck me that the whole debate is centered around this assumption that JavaScript off equals accessible and JavaScript on, or rather JavaScript only, equals inaccessible. Is that
the
actually
opposite of that, I guess. Right.
I have questions. Is that actually true? I thought the whole point of ARIA attributes was to work around the limitations of screen readers.
I think what's happening here is that we're confusing the issue of, there's this issue of accessibility. So the debate, just to frame it for Wes's benefit here, is there's a button in which that if it's literally a button element in HTML, right? Which if outside of the context of a form has no functionality whatsoever, you have to bind it to some kind of JavaScript event handler for it to do anything. Mm-hmm. And if JavaScript is off, then it is completely non-functional button. And if JavaScript is on, it does what it's supposed to do. But that's an issue of progressive enhancement and like how you're building the app, which is related but slightly different issue than how accessible that button is. Aren't those two different concepts, really, Dave?
Yeah, that would be kind of different concepts. The like accessibility wise, it's kind of a tricky situation. I think the last Web AIM series, and you can look at this up. The Web AIM survey. He does an annual survey. The last one was about like 2-3% of people who use screen readers disable JavaScript entirely. So
two
that's
out of three,
like 2-3%.
Two to three percent. I thought it was 66%.
Yeah, no. 2-3% disable JavaScript. And that's only to say they have a visual impairment and the use of JavaScript on a page typically has worse outcome than the like complete lack of JavaScript. Like when they go to a site with JavaScript, it is so confusing to them. They've said, you know what? I'm not doing JavaScript. They've opted out of that whole entire tree of the three pillars of web design. So it kind of muddies, the conversation is muddied between JavaScript on and off and accessible, but most people using a screen reader or an AT, assistive technology of any kind, will have JavaScript enabled. So let's maybe divorce those conversations, but I guess the whole thing is like, is it usable? Is it accessible? I don't know.
Where do you kind of weigh in on these conversations usually, Wes? You know, do you have?
Yeah, I've got. His name is escaping me right now, but I've got an actual blind user on Twitter who I often just shoot links his way, and I say, "Hey, what does this do for you?" Because he has a screen reader, and there's no way that he can actually see what's going on. So when I sort of have those one-off situations, I either ask him or. This Billy Gregory, he's the Billy Gregory on Twitter, if you want to check him out. He's just like full in all accessibility, everything. He's here from Toronto, and he always answers my questions about that kind of stuff. So I don't know. I'm not sure what I would do in that situation. I think I'd have to see a bit more context. But I think it really just boils down to just trying it on a couple different screen readers and see if it works or not.
Yeah, no, it's tough. I think it's what I was saying, I think, in that episode, is it's tough to have this feature there, you know, and working with and without JavaScript and kind of marrying the two. But I ended up getting it kind of working. But yeah, it's tough. Well, I don't know. I think it would help everybody to get to know screen readers, and then you can kind of learn how they work. I keep coming to that.
Yeah.
Solution.
Yeah, like spend, if we all kind of with it on.
Yeah, if we all kind of knew how they worked, the internet would get a lot better for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. Another thing I did recently was on the iPhone, you can turn on low contrast mode, mm-hmm. and you can also turn on there's a whole bunch of different filters. There's grayscale for people who don't see color very well, and I just went like a whole 2 days on my iPhone with grayscale on just to kind of see what the internet looks like in the eyes of someone like that.
You can even do things like if you turn your brightness all the way down, that like simulates somebody with like low vision, like low contrast vision. So like try to use your website with your brightness all the way down. I couldn't read my website, so I changed things. So, yep, whoops. All right. Well.
And if you drink like 15 beers, you can simulate what it's like to work on a website that sells assault rifle parts.
Whoa.
Whoa. Oh my God.
Whoa. All right. Okay. Next. I'm just going to hard.
Just kidding. Hard swap. Just kidding.
Here we go. All right. Kelvin Adawura writes in, I am a self-taught developer from the UK who has just managed to secure himself a job in a digital agency as a junior developer. My duties, we're like way over time. Are you okay, Wes?
Yeah, I was probably like,
okay, well, we should.
My duties involve how to solve issues using JavaScript and PHP, which currently I really suck at. I know there's no magic bullet to help me improve, but I wanted to know your advice at solving these issues programmatically. Is there an approach you would suggest or any books that would help me recommend or that you would recommend on solving problem solving or any blogs to help me, please? Kelvin's having trouble with kind of JavaScript, PHP debugging and solving problems. Any thoughts there?
Yeah. I think for me, when I'm teaching, I'll often come upon an error, and when I hit an error, I won't just fix it quickly and be like, oh, don't worry about it. I'll sort of like read through the error, try to talk about how we understand it. Because when I learned web development, I didn't read a ton of books. What I did is I just watched a lot of people's screencasts. I watched them sort of think through it. And I think Chris does a great job at this in all of his screencasts as well, is explain your thought process as to how it's going. So if you go on YouTube and just watch a whole bunch of different coding tutorials, you're going to pretty quickly see how people think and how they debug. And that's really where I've picked up a lot of my my workflow stuff, is just from watching other people.
I feel like we could probably use our soundbite for Kelvin on this one.
Oh, okay. Let me go find things. So what would you say? What would you say, Chris?
I'd consider an approach kind of like
just build websites.
I love that. Yeah, I think also on that point, it's like, how do you get better? You just build stuff. Just build lots and lots and lots of stuff. A lot of times people ask me all the time, what's the best book? What's the best tutorial to watch? And what's the best? And it's really, you can't just sleep on a book and it will all make sense. It's just, if you build 1,000 things, you will be amazing.
That's nice.
Yeah.
I was going to say,
1,000 things.
I like, there's a talk by Adam Sontag from the jQuery podcast fame called Fixing These jQuery. It's fixingthesejquery.com. Try to find a video too. That's been the best. It's just about debugging jQuery and how you hit like problems. And Adam pulled all this knowledge from like his jQuery IRC helping. Like he'd help people who'd be like, jQuery sucks, it doesn't work. And he'd be like, well, okay, let's walk through what's going on. So yeah. He kind of starts from the beginning on how, like, common errors, things that could be happening. It really, I mean, I didn't know I needed this talk, but when I first heard it, I was like, that is actually, I have these questions all the time. Like when it's like undefined is not a function, what does that mean? You know, you start to understand the errors that are being spit out. And the same could go with PHP. Just after a million failures, you sort of understand, oh, that's what that thing is getting at. And that's why it printed out a file name and told me the line number that that is messed up. So I really like it. That's one of my favorite go-to how to learn debugging resources.
I didn't know about this.
Yeah, me neither. Hot tip.
Yeah. It's just cool. For me, I'll say this. It's great to have like a junior like understanding of how to fix errors. And he's, you know, Adam's very funny. So I can't believe we haven't had him on the show, but very funny guy. So it's just amazing to have that kind of, I don't know. It's fun to have his perspective on how to fix things.
It's even, yeah, this is good. I'm already distracted clicking through it, but it's like you can, yeah, stuff that I don't often reach for, like setting breakpoints and using debugger statements and stuff, are good things to reach for that I don't usually. I'm like Captain Console.log and stuff. And yeah. Anyway, there's different ways. Anyway, let's wrap it up here. How do you do that?
All right, Wes, thank you so much for coming on the show. We really appreciate it.
Absolutely.
How can people find you on the Tweetars, give you money? How does that work? And then what's one big thing you'd like to plug before you go?
All right. You can hit me up, Wes Boss at Wes Boss, WesBoss.com, Wes Boss everywhere. Just kind of reach out, say hi, say that you saw me on the podcast. I love meeting new people. What I like to plug, probably my book right now, sublimetextbook.com. You can use coupon code SHOPTALK for, I think, $10, $11 off, something like that. I'll make sure it's 11. And, yeah, I'm writing another book on Gulp right now, so, stay tuned.
Nice.
Ooh. Interesting you choose Gulp. It's so easy to use out of the box.
It is.
I just don't understand. jokes. Joke podcast. All right. Well, thank you so much, Wes.
No problem. Thanks for having me. It was fun.
You, dear listener, thank you for downloading this and your podcatcher of choice. Please be sure to rate it up 5 stars or whatever. That's how people find out about the show. We really appreciate it. If you hate your job, head over to shoptalkshow.com/jobs. We mentioned it in the show. You can get a new job because people want to hire you because of your skills, because you are listening to this show right now. And I'm trying to think, Chris, you got anything else you'd like to say?
Well, just that shoptalkshow.com.